Begin.
Please note that the following program includes adult themes and language. You're listening to the weekly show on Discourse.
I'm back.
Oh yeah, we're all back. I'm Morgan Nickel, Big Mouth Dickhead from the internet. And then silence, because guess what? We're recording on Wednesday night. Normally we record on Tuesday. This doesn't matter to the podcast listeners, but the live listeners, well, they already know what's going on. Dylan's kids got sick last night, and tonight, guess what? Well, Dylan got sick. So he's off. Maybe he's passed out, wrapped around a toilet, or maybe he is, singing into it. But he's definitely not here. And so guess what that means? That means you've pretty much, well, you've got me all to yourself. And you remember how well that went last time? I'm sure you do. Usually, and under these circumstances, I would arrange to have a co-host. But, given that the solo show last time was, it was absolutely outstanding, I've decided probably I should do that again. I've just got a text. Dylan says, don't go rogue. But he did say it with a smiley face, so I'm going to assume that he meant go rogue. I've also decided that given that he's unwell, that can sometimes be an adventure. Sometimes it's actually fun. You know, you feel like you've gotten awfulness out of your body, and rather than holding it within all the time, you know, it's let the stress out. It's not nice at the time while it's happening, but then later on, maybe you can feel a sense of relief. And so what I've done is I've had some frankfurters for dinner, and the best before date was 6 days ago. So I mean, maybe that's a risk. Maybe it is a risk. Maybe it's a risk I shouldn't have taken. But bygones, it's happened in the past, and I think we should all move on from that, and maybe into a porcelainy, ceramic-y future of joy and coldness and gasping for breath. It could be one of those things.
We've got a guest on Discourse.
So we actually have got a guest because, well, I've never started the show entirely by myself, and I'm not ready to start. And given what happened over the weekend, which was the Labour Party conference, I've managed to rope Jordan Carter into joining us again. He was last on the show during the Discourse election show, believe it or not, such a long time ago. Jordan, you might recall, was a Labour list candidate, I think. Not an electorate, that's right, yeah?
That's right.
Now, I wanted to describe him as a policy wonk, but apparently that doesn't have the right connotations. I looked it up on Urban Dictionary, and that says expert in the field, typically someone who's fairly young and very intelligent, or to use one's mastery of a specific subject to perform some type of work. So, I mean, I think, you know, policy wonk, or maybe we could say some kind of activist thing, I don't know. Jordan's worked in internet policy with Internet NZ, and I don't even know who else, probably everyone, given how small the country is, for the best part of the last decade. And he was described on public address today, and you may not be aware of this, Jordan, as sensible and influential.
Sensible and influential, that yeah. Sounds a bit middle-aged to be a wonk.
Now, as a Labour Party insider, naturally, you were at the conference over the weekend, and we've heard a great deal about one side of it, and that was basically Patrick Gower making his play for the Labour leadership.
Yes.
But what we haven't heard so much about is something that I've only read a little bit about, and that is huge changes internally in the structure of the Labour Party, how policy is decided on and selected, how the leadership is selected, and so on. And I'm very interested in hearing from you about that side of it. And we can let the crazies, TV3 mainly, Ghana probably, talk about the rest of it. So I want to know what happened at the conference aside from that other thing.
Well, it was one of the biggest conferences we've had in a long time, Morgan. There was around about 1,000 people there for David Shearer's speech on Sunday, right, and around about 800 in the room for the period on Friday and Saturday when we were doing all the debate and stuff. Yeah. So it was big, and that means that, as usual, there's heaps of people catching up who haven't seen each other for a while, either since the last one or for a while before that. There was a policy debate on Sunday that was shorter than usual because of all the focus on the organizational stuff on the Saturday. And there was the big rules debate all day Saturday, a couple of speeches outside, Helen Kelly from the CTU and Grant Robertson, the deputy leader. and a few social functions as well. So it was the normal mix of conferencey stuff with a bit more kind of urgency and interest than usual and a bit more passionate debate than usual, because for the first Labour conference in a long time, there was actually some serious stuff on the table to decide.
Right.
So pretty good weekend overall.
Right. 1,000 people is huge. And if anyone had asked me how big is the Labour conference, I'd say, I don't know, 200?
Oh, well, we haven't had one at 200 for, you know, probably since 1920s. The usual size is get about sort of 500 delegates or so, and we had about 630 this year. So up about 20%, and a whole heap more people piled in for the speech.
Right.
And wanted to sort of see what was going on up front.
Of course, I speak as someone who's never been a member of any party. So I've got no idea about you know, how any of this is done. What I expected, though, was that, you know, to be a member of the Labour Party or any party would mean that you would always have input, and in a democracy, you'd probably get to vote on pretty much everything. I mean, I've been on committees where, you know, someone makes a motion, another person seconds it, and then everyone votes. And so that was what I expected would happen at the conference, where they do things like, you know, decide on the list and decide on all the policy and decide on all of that stuff. But it sounds like that's actually not how it's done, and it's not how it's ever been done. And everything, as I understand it, everything was decided always by the caucus. And that was basically just dictated to the party, and they would support it or not. And given the way parties work, basically they had to support it. Is that approximately right?
It's a bit of an exaggeration, to be honest. You know, one of the things about MPs deciding stuff is that they've all got electorates and they're all talking to people across the party the whole time. So they listen to the members, they get influenced by that. So even in the days when the caucus made the calls, they were doing that at least somewhat in line with what members wanted. And all that voting stuff does happen, but it happens in tiers. So it happens at the local branch level, and then things go to electorates, and then to regions, and then to the national conference. So it's kind of a cumbersome structure in a way, and part of the reforms this weekend have been trying to simplify that a bit. But it has always been the case here, like it is in Australia, that issues like the leadership have just been chosen by the parliamentary party, by the caucus until now. And that's probably one of the most significant changes that we made on the weekend. So it isn't that it hasn't been democratic. It's just that there's been a bit of a shift in the rules changes this weekend.
Right. So instead of there being 500 committees around the country, there are still those committees, but also delegates get to vote at a larger meeting.
Hmm. Yeah, yeah. So with the system for the do you want to talk about the leadership system?
I want to talk about everything that happened.
Well, the leadership debate was about saying that there should be an input for members and for affiliated members, so members of affiliated trade unions, as well as MPs in the caucus.
Yeah.
And this all comes off the back of 8 months of talking to members and doing a really thorough organizational review that looked at the evidence overseas, what other successful parties do, that looked for ways to make Labour a kind of more values-driven organization based on Labour values, and also to kind of democratize the party on the basis that as society is changing, people are less and less willing to just be told what to do by some faceless government or some faceless committee.
Yeah.
And, you know, people are demanding more of a say in the way that their country is run, and Labour needs to move with the times on that. So I think that the overall package of reform is quite a good set of steps in that direction.
The rise of the internet, people do expect now to be able to stick their oar in, don't they?
Yeah, and when they do say something, they kind of expect to be listened to.
I actually got myself in a little bit of trouble. Now, someone tweeted at, what's his name? He's one of those terrible, Stephen Joyce, Stephen Joyce talked some shit about the new Labour policy for building these 100,000 houses for lower income people.
Mm-hmm.
And he talked some shit, and a bunch of people said, basically, well, I said to him, most specifically, I said, well, you know, it's better than your zero ideas that you've ever come up with. And unfortunately, then he replied with a couple of URLs for the ideas that they actually have already got as policy, which mainly, I think, the biggest one, the only one that had been implemented appeared to be a green policy. But, you know, that's all good. It's all good. And the rest of it was, we will discuss and consider. So it's not exactly groundbreaking stuff, but I still did get told by the MP himself, which is pretty amazing, actually. You know, it makes you really feel part of the democracy to get told off.
And it's a lot more direct than just trying to write them a letter and wait a few weeks for something to come back, isn't it?
Yeah.
that sense of immediacy.
Yeah.
And of course, the other factor is that when you write a letter back like you did in the old days, no one else could see it necessarily. But on the tweet, you know, or on Facebook or whatever, everyone can see what you're saying. So it is. It's more immediate and it's faster. I mean, their ideas on housing are crap. They don't have any. It's just like, oh, well, the market will do it. And in all sorts of areas, that isn't working. So, you know, the QE build stuff that David Shearer announced is a really good plan. And it answers a problem that is real.
Yeah. Now, tell me more, a little bit more about the QE build stuff. I understand there's about 100,000 houses which are planned to be built. The aim is to have them cost like $350,000, something like that. But where are they going to be built and how is it all going to be funded? Do you have a grasp on all that stuff?
Do you know what? I was sitting in the hall and I was raving about the speech and I was going to go and look it up.
Yeah.
And I haven't gone and looked it up yet.
All right. Well, we'll leave that next exercise for the listener.
In terms of the broad picture is the getting that number built in a context where we were building around, I think, about 30,000 homes a year in the whole country at the peak of the boom in 2004.
Yeah.
Even further back, 60s and 70s, around a third of the houses being built were affordable. And now it's only 5%.
Right.
So that's why this intervention is focused at the more affordable end of the market. And I think that the issue is, you know, to be getting up to 10,000 a year.
Yeah.
And the focus in the first 5 years is in Auckland, where the biggest shortages are.
Oh, I tell you what, sure is. Living in Auckland and having a above average income and a spouse who has a well above average income and yet not being able to buy a house is really weird.
It's monstrous, isn't it?
It's a bizarre situation to be in, you know. It's been described, I think, now who, Bernard Hickey, I think, calls it intergenerational theft. Basically, the boomers all are making out like bandits, having bought when everything was, you know, when a Ponsonby villa was $10,000, like my mother did. The rest of us are basically paying for their retirement by somehow struggling to buy a house, mostly by coming back with pockets full of pounds, it seems, mm-hmm. or scrimping and struggling and saving for 5 years just to get a deposit, which it just seems outrageous.
Yeah, it is. You know, I face the same thing, kind of mid-30s, and the idea of being able to even get a deposit together is solely related to KiwiSaver savings to me. You know, and that's still a terrifying prospect of trying to get, you know, if you want to live within sort of 20 minutes of where you work, and you work in the middle of the town, even in Wellington, you're looking at sort of either sort of $500,000 or $600,000 for a house. Well, if you want to get an apartment, you have to have an even bigger deposit because the banks won't lend as much.
And a lot of them suck because New Zealand property developers are awful, horrible bastards, apparently, to make an extra $5 a floor.
One of the things with this plan is that by getting the state involved, there can be some upward pressure on the quality and the standard of design and so on,
right.
And hopefully some cost savings through more being done.
Yeah.
So it should drop the cost for other houses that are being built in that kind of zone as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a big, bold policy. 100,000 houses is a lot when you think that we've got like 1.9 million or so at the moment.
Yeah.
It's a big increase in supply. And if you take that along with the implementation of a capital gains tax, which is another one of the things that we've already said we'll do, you're actually starting to take some of the hard calls that will really make a difference.
Yeah.
And that was the theme of Shearer's speech to the conference, you know, big change, you know, to change New Zealand for the better. And, you know, some concrete, gritty things that really do need to change to stop New Zealand sort of slowly slipping behind under the waves.
I think
apparently in John Key's brighter future.
Yeah. There are a lot of things that I think need to change. One, we need to stop exporting. This is something I rant on about all the time. I'm very sorry. If you get tired of it, just, I don't know.
Mute you?
Yeah, pretty much.
Or interrupt you.
Yeah. Well, interruption would be fine. We've got to stop exporting, you know, rough milled pine trees and meat and dairy. And we've got to start exporting things that actually have all the value added already. Instead of giving our raw materials to other people to add all the value to, we should be doing it our damn selves. And also, of course, we should be exporting ideas, bits, you know, digital stuff rather than physical stuff all the time. It's madness. Absolutely.
Well, we need a second cable to do that one more effectively. And that's something Claire Curran's been running on for a while.
and now
.com is joining her. Which
yeah.
Is
well, I think .com makes it less likely to happen than more likely to happen. But, you know.
Possibly. I don't know what the states would say about him trying to land a cable in the US. But
now, I've heard that actually there is a landing point down, I think, in Mexico. And that is sort of more agnostic. And so we possibly could just put it there and then have, you know, over land connections up into the States. But it still seems unnecessarily complicated just to let that bandit be involved in the project when he doesn't need to be.
Well, this is just another consequence of hands-off. You know, everyone knows we need another cable. The government could relatively easily and with low cost secure it. But no, the market will do it.
Yeah. Just the market never does it.
Like, you know, one of the reasons that we have all this raw export stuff is because they've got a global trading system where the raw materials have got no tariffs on them.
Yeah.
So if you want to export logs to the US, you're probably fine. But if you want to export tables or chairs or beautiful pieces of furniture, they whack huge tariffs on them. That's how the poor South out of the market for ages, and that's why we get stuck with commodity exports.
Right.
So that's something that's a bit harder for a government here to change, because that's about getting the WTO to operate in the interests of everyone, not just the rich.
And then, of course, we get told that to change anything about our trade with the States, we probably have to accept the TPPA, which will mean letting them destroy Pharmac, which doesn't seem like an excellent trade, but I'm sure there is a solution to that.
Well, we'd had a pretty good debate on Trans-Pacific Partnership at the conference as well.
Yeah, there's right? Now, what real was the
concerns,
conclusion?
Real concerns about the proposals that have been leaked. And, of course, we are only dealing with leaks at the moment. But, the leaks have been pretty accurate in the past.
Yeah. Now, see, I haven't heard anything about that having happened. This red herring thing is overshadowing the whole story.
It's a real shame, eh? Because if you think about the main things that got done, there was the policy debate with some really interesting remits, and they're on the Labour website. There was the huge set of changes which really gave people more of a say in the direction of the party and the policy and the leadership. Improving the election fighting capacity, making sure we're better organized to take account of MMP by not just focusing on electorates. There were some decisions about increasing the representation of women in Parliament and in the Labour Party caucus. But it was all distracted by something else. So,
now I have actually heard something about that. Having a required percentage of female MPs, is that right?
There was a policy agreement that was up for debate, but it didn't get debated. We ran out of time.
That does actually sound like a bad one to me. It sounds dangerous to require, 50-50. I think requiring, having a bottom limit might be a good idea, but not 50-50.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's exactly the kind of debate that would have happened.
We don't
know what the answer would have been, like on a whole lot of other questions. We don't know what the answer would have been because it wasn't on the agenda. We didn't get to it in time.
I'll tell you
what
my answer would
be. We had about 80 policy agreements to debate in 2 hours, and we only got through about 12 of them. So.
Right. That sounds about right. My answer to having more female MPs in Parliament is for Labour to have more in the list.
You can do that. But... we've been reasonably good at it. We've got one of the more balanced caucuses in the parliament, and we will be. There's going to be a debate next year about rule changes for the party to improve that side of things in its own candidate selection.
Yeah,
and that's where the main attention will be. That's much more. I don't think we'll see a Labour Party policy to impose quotas on the outside organisations, but what we do internally is our own business. So we can make that kind of change because we are committed to equality.
Yeah. Here's one change to the list I would like to see. Can we put you somewhere higher than 40?
Well, I would, of course, like to see that as well. but given that I'm a candidate, I don't get to help decide the order of it. So I'll be lobbying and you're welcome to join me.
So now, is that right? So are people who are on the list not allowed to have involvement in the selection of the order?
Yeah. The only people who can are sitting MPs who are part of the caucus representation on the list moderating committee.
I see. Okay.
So the leader and the deputy and one other person elected by caucus, they're allowed to be candidates.
Right.
Everyone else can't be because it's kind of an obvious conflict.
Okay. I would suggest that you should have a greater representation of New Zealand podcasters on the list. Now, probably you might say that I would need to be a member of the Labour Party in order to be on the Labour list.
But, it is essential.
Why quibble on the details? I want to get onto that gravy train like Toe.
Well, you can set up your own party or find someone you want to join.
That always goes so well.
You're definitely not going to get on a list without a party to join.
I don't know. Now, I think that joining any party that would take me, I don't know that I'd want to.
I think your political career just died.
Oh, no.
Sorry.
Well, maybe I can be an independent and be the first president of New Zealand. Because, I saw that guy, Charles, and he, I don't know, he might be our last king. He might never be our king, of course, but he might be our last.
Who? Charles who?
Yeah, exactly. Charles Wales.
Who's that?
Yeah, exactly. Who is he? I didn't elect him. And yet we paid for his wife's haircuts.
That was nice of us.
Yeah, it was very nice of us. I don't think we paid much for his airfare. It would have just been first class Air New Zealand. That would have been nice for him, not British Airways.
Lovely jubbling.
It was funny seeing Prince Charles, in fact, and kind of in person, because it's weird when you see those big international people who you're familiar with from your entire life, and they look exactly how you expect. Because, you know, normally when you see someone like from New Zealand television in real life, that's not how they look. They're not exactly like, you know, their skin is all messed up and they're much shorter than you thought. And you feel like maybe someone has been playing a gag, or they're much, much fatter or thinner than you thought, or much older. But, you know, Prince Charles, exactly what was expected.
Television does weird things to people, I think.
Yeah. Being married to Prince Charles apparently does weird things to people too. But, you know, that's...
it's infectious.
So maybe we should get back to policy stuff, because my blathering will probably bore you to tears, just like our poor podcast listeners. Now, the policy change on leadership selection. Now, I understand that was a bit controversial, because I think that the vote was actually pretty evenly split. But I understand that the Greens vote on their leadership every year, and that doesn't seem to have been a problem for them.
Well, the first point is that almost all of the votes about it were not split at all.
Right.
You know, the idea that we would have a balance of members, unions, and MPs electing the leader from now on went through with pretty much no opposition.
Right.
And all of the debate ended up being about what the triggering point should be for, you know, how many votes would you need in the caucus to not face a vote.
Yeah.
So each term there'd be an endorsement vote. And the debate was between whether you'd need to get 50% and one to be secure or face a vote,
yeah,
or whether you needed to get 60% plus one to be secure and get a vote. So the conference debated that, and it decided by a reasonably sound margin to go with the 60%, sorry.
Right.
So, you know, that was because, there would have been all sorts of reasons why people were voting for that. But the theme of the conference was, we want our party to be more democratic. We want to give people more say. And given that this process triggers a big inclusive vote by a whole lot of people, people wanted to make it a little bit easier to have that test.
Right.
And so that part of the vote, you know, people said it was overshadowed by other issues, but people were engaging, you know, by and large in that debate in the issue that was in front of them.
Yeah.
And there were some very passionate and eloquent speeches. You know, it was a really good debate.
Why do the unions get a vote?
Why?
Yeah.
Because the affiliation link is really strong with Labour. You know, the Labour Party and the trade unions have been together since the party's birth. The unions founded the party.
Yeah.
They've got, you know, they have about 20% of the delegates at any annual conference because of the number of affiliated members that there are.
Yeah.
And what it does is it keeps the Labour Party kind of grounded in a social reality.
Right.
You know, while not everyone is a member of union, there will be union members in almost every kind of workplace, and the people who join unions do all the sorts of jobs that everyone else does.
Yeah.
So, you know, other parties can just have random, you know, they can go off in any direction, if you like. They can be taken by their leaders in whatever direction they like, but Labour's got that solid organic link to a big section of the community, and it's just something that most of us in the party support, and that I don't think will be going anywhere anytime soon. So there was, you know, we gave about the same amount of say as there is in the party conference, 20%.
Right.
And we split the rest half and half between the ordinary members and the MPs.
Right.
And so if that process does get triggered, there'll be a few days for people to nominate, and then there'll be a series of meetings around the country, a little bit similar to what we had last year, where people are out there campaigning to get support. And the difference next time is that people will be casting ballots as well, rather than just sort of offering suggestions to their MPs. And 3 weeks later or so, most likely, you'll see a Labour leader elected by that process.
Yeah. I think it's really dangerous for people to be talking too much about that. I mean, obviously, it's interesting, but all of the lefty bloggers and online lefties who have been talking about it, they need to understand that they damage the party by engaging in too much conjecture about what's going on with that. And I think we should let it lie until February, and then, you know, we'll find out what happens then.
Well, I don't really want to talk about that, but except to say that, you know, there is now a process in place, and it would have been great if the only things going on at the conference had been the focus on that debate and that huge change and how widespread it was.
Yeah.
You know, you had MPs of all stripes getting up and supporting this shift. It had been debated endlessly in the caucus and in the room. And I actually think it's really impressive that a group of people who, by their nature, they're politicians, they're trying to get power, were happy to see a reform agenda that took some power away from them and spread it out.
Yeah.
You know, it's a real testimony to how well the review was done, how carefully it listened to people's voices and took all the feedback on board. So, you know, the real story is that these profound changes were made in a remarkably united way, with most of the votes being not unanimous, but there's always people who oppose them and want to make a point.
Yeah.
But regularly, sort of 90% plus votes in the conference. And the one that was close was kind of a symbol of a different debate.
Yeah.
The thing is that the conference was a disaster, or that it was really, you know, people were fighting against democratization, but the facts don't stand up to that.
Right. Well, I mean, making a political party democratic shouldn't be controversial. It sounds like it wasn't.
Depends what kind of party it is. I don't think Winston will be making New Zealand First democratic anytime soon. And if you look, at John Key's record, you know, every time there's a democracy, he tries to shut it down.
Yeah.
Look at Canterbury Regional Council. Look at what they're doing with reducing the number of people on polytech and university councils.
Yeah.
Take student reps away from there. Look at what they did with the Auckland Council. They took away the most democratic model that was in the Royal Commission report.
Mm.
Look at the way they treat people who oppose them in the public service. They have these witch hunts. Look at what happens when someone who's on a benefit voices their complaints. They get their details leaked to the media.
Yeah.
I mean, these people are a bunch of anti-democratic thugs is the way it's going.
Yeah.
They are
thugs, and I do want them gone. And it's your guys have got to do that for me, please.
We've got to get it together.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what we've got with the platform now, the changes that we made is we can be on the way to doing that because we've changed ourselves to be more in line with what the country needs. Now we need to sort of buckle down, work together, and demonstrate that we've got the ideas to govern with.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm excited to look at the Labour site and see everything else that happened, because it sounds like heaps of other stuff happened.
Have a look at that. There's a big button on the front under the main header called Conference 2012, and there's a few documents there and a bit of news to look at. And have a look at David Shearer's speech. It was bloody good.
I want to see this TPPA stuff. I want to know what happened with that.
Yeah, in the conference thing, click on the policy tab and look at the policy remit book.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Cool. All right. Well, you've got a lot of work to do, so you'd better go and get started.
Yeah, we've got to try and get 10,000 people to understand how their policy system has changed. Good stuff.
All right. Cool. Thank you so much for joining us once again. And maybe we can talk again, well, before the next election, certainly.
That'd be good, Morgan.
Cool. Cheers.
Have a nice evening.
You too. Bye-bye. And now, guess what? Now it's just me. You and me. Us. Together. Forever and ever and ever and ever. Or it might just feel that way. It might feel that way, you know. Let me see. How short, how abbreviated should I make this show, do you think? Eh? Apparently, the chat room's been waiting for me to go solo again. Kevin Long in the chat room said, I've been waiting for this moment for so long. Listen to how clean that audio is. Do you hear how good it is when Skype isn't interfering? Skype is noisy. Skype is a noisy pig. Well, I'll tell you what. I mean, I don't want to disappoint anyone, but I'm not going to go off the rails. I'm not going to go crazy. I'm going to have my my lowbrow. It's a beer lowbrow this week. It's a shandy, actually. The thing that makes it a lowbrow is a lot of ice and serve it in a jar. That's all it takes. Nothing else. It's easy to make a lowbrow. Nice, and it's a nice big and refreshing beverage. Whatever it is, served out of a jar, it works really well. DiscourseCo.nz/VPN. Simple as that. So what do you think we should do on the rest of the show? We've got ages and we've got all sorts of things we can talk about. I would do the news, but doing it by myself is weird. Peter Jackson, or someone very close to him, shitlisted a Radio New Zealand journalist for writing too many negative stories. And so she, I can't remember what her name was, she can't go to the Hobbit premiere because she's written too many negative stories. She had been invited to the Hobbit premiere, and the PR company for the film, the Hobbit distribution company, uninvited her. That's pretty stink. That's not really the New Zealand way, is it? If Dylan was here, we possibly could talk about Israel live tweeting the invasion of Gaza.
1 minute.
1 minute. I may have fast-forwarded time a little bit. And the incredibleness of the Iron Dome. I don't know if you looked at this, but this is a missile defense system. It's amazing. There are some incredible videos. There was one in particular that was shot at a wedding where you can see some of these Iron Dome missiles firing up into the night sky and intercepting incoming rockets. It actually works. Apparently, it correctly intercepted 90% of the incoming rockets that it was used on. It's smart enough, the Iron Dome system, to evaluate the trajectory of the incoming rocket and decide whether to intercept one or not. Because if it's going to fall in an inhabited place, why bother? $100,000 a shot. Anyway, it's been really good having you on the show. It was a quick one, wasn't it? Maybe the quickest ever. I'll see you next week when we'll maybe have two people or more.
One.
Goodbye.
You're listening to the weekly show
with God.
All right, we're using that one.
It's like the Patriot missile system, but it actually works well. And I think the missiles might be a bit smaller and they cost a little bit less to fire off. The Patriots were big, I think. Well, relatively big. The incoming rockets is it Hamas that fires them? The incoming rockets are not, even remotely intelligent. I think they pretty much just kind of fire them at townships. And they're not even accurate enough to say whether they'll hit a town or not. Absolutely horrific, the whole thing. Both sides full of bastards. And yet, I sympathize with both sides. Yeah. It's tough. What a horrible conflict. All right, well, how long was that? That wasn't very long. About 30 minutes? That'll do. That'll do. I should have called it Shandy Lowbrow from the beginning. I might just, before I hang up, I might just check in on Dylan. Dylan, are you there? Right, so that's how Dylan's going. Apparently, don't know why he answered. Don't know how he answered so fast.
Fish and chips, fish and chips, fish and chips.
This show is cancelled. Beep.